And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast, where week four, quarantine America. Things are getting a little dicey, but hopefully we're all going to stay strong and get through it. And I am thrilled to be joined on this podcast by, I don't know, two American heroes. I don't even know how to introduce you. We have a three-time WNBA champion, two-time NCAA champion, four-time Olympic gold medalist, Sue Bird, friend of the program. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Sitting next to her is, I mean, the American flag for like a year, two-time World Cup champion, one-time Olympic gold medalist, right? Just one?
Yeah.
Kind of slacking on that. The reigning FIFA World Player of the Year, Megan Rapinoe. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well here. Yeah, my resume is shorter than some people's, but it's still something.
It's respectable. It's respectable.
Yeah. Just to join in and include myself, I beat my daughter in chutes and ladders this morning.
Oh, that's actually, right. I mean, considering little kids cheat, that's actually very impressive.
She does try to cheat, but I regulate her. I'm 1-7 against her during the quarantine. So that was my Olympic gold medal, really.
Big win. Might be a turning point in that series.
She's a little worried that it is. I can tell you she didn't take it well. She's a little worried that I'm about to rally. I'm also very good at ping pong, I guess. I'm pretty confident I might be able to like take you guys at ping pong. So that's it. That's all I got. You are quarantined together. What have you learned about each other from what have you learned about each other from this experience that you didn't know? Because I always tell people marriage is like the little step. Living together is that's the real thing. And you're like super living together. So give me something, one of you, that you have learned about the other.
I mean,
yeah, we were talking about this the other day.
So it's like, we're not weaseling our way out of this. Early in our relationship, we had this kind of time together. Like, it's just the way it played out. Our schedules were conducive.
Yeah, we were both out of season.
Yeah.
So
we like basically did quarantine for the first couple months of our relationship, like essentially living together, even though not technically. So now that we're doing it again, it's more so like all these things we were joking, like confirmed.
A lot of confirmations happening. Daily confirmation.
Like, oh yeah. She leaves the lights on in every room. Confirmed. That's Megan. She's Megan like, leaves the lights light on again, everywhere like, we go. I'm like, Megan, just turn them off when you leave. Forget. When we leave the house, just turn them off.
I remember when my now wife and I moved in together. I got to the apartment first. She was coming from Canada, and I walked into this apartment, and I had this realization of like, she's now gonna know everything. Like, she's gonna realize how disgusting I am. Like, all of my habits. Like she's gonna learn all that. And I had this moment of like, oh my God, like this could be we could go 2 weeks and that could be it. Like, that could be it. But you guys are doing
downhill really quickly.
See, that's where Megan came in hot. It was like, she just kind of like showed all of her cards right out the gate. I knew exactly what I was getting.
I was coming right in. Right at home.
So leaving the lights on, that's fine. You just flick them off. Like, that's as bad as it gets.
I know. I have a weird thing though. I don't like them on. Like, when you're not in the room, I don't like them on. I know. It's weird.
I know. That's why I'm like, is it really that big?
It kind of is annoying.
But then it's like, you know, I have to understand that this is something that she cares about.
It's my love language.
It's my love language. So I need to respect it. And then I got to like do the give and take. I'm like, okay, I'm trying.
Yeah. We've had a lot of confirmations.
Yeah. Okay. Cause the first quarantine anything early in the relationship doesn't count. Cause then it's just bliss. You're like, you're in bliss. Now it's like, you're in the thick of it. Okay, so I'm glad to hear it's going well. Yep. The Olympics have been postponed for a year. The WNBA season just got postponed indefinitely, yesterday, I think?
Yeah.
So now it's like, now, and there's going to continue to be ripples of this. Like, we don't know when the NFL is going to start. We don't know when college football is going to start. Is baseball going to have a season? This is going to keep happening. But your two sports, big things just got postponed. So, like, is there a light at the end of the tunnel? Like, when do you guys, like, how are you guys handling? Like, now it's, we just don't know, right?
Yeah, it's awkward. To be honest, it's like there's kind of moments where, so when the Olympics got postponed, I was actually thrilled because it was postponed and not canceled.
Yeah.
Because to me, canceling was like a bit, like, that was a real option. Yeah, so postponement, I was kind of like, phew. And then it also took that like workout pressure off. But then very quickly I was like, well, I got to be in shape for the WNBA. Like when and if that ever happens. So then now I think we're both kind of in this like awkward, like some days feeling motivated, like, yeah, the virus is going to go away. The season will start when it starts. We got to be ready. And then other days we're like, we're definitely not playing sports for another like 6 months. Like, why are we running outside? Like, what are we doing? So it's like an awkward,
I know. I feel like we motivation keep going thing. From zoomed in to zoomed out, zoomed in. We're kind of like, oh, okay. If you quarantine all the players and then you bring them back and then you don't play and then you zoom out and you're like, what? We're not getting on planes. We're not flying anywhere. We're
like,
not
how are we pulling this off?
We're not like, we're not even close to as, you know, even in the country of like, A, having a handle on it or even understanding because it's so new. I mean, we can look to China. We can look to what they're doing in Italy and South Korea and other places, but like, we don't really know as like a humanity what this is going to be. How can we creep back out of this? Like, what does that even mean? And sports is kind of like, it's an essential thing, like to the way we feel, but like really it's not like an essential thing. So we've kind of like gone to the zoom in, zoom out, but also I think we've sort of let ourselves be like, okay, like just do what you can, work out for health, but also, you know, we're probably going to be in this for a minute or six.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a while. I know I saw JJ Redick's podcast. I can't believe he finagled you guys on his podcast. You're talking about indoor workouts. You were talking about doing step ups.
Yeah.
My wife and I have been doing the 7-minute workout for the last year, like pretty regularly when we don't have time to do anything else. The step ups are part of that. Critical thing that you guys mentioned on that podcast, you gotta land on the carpet because if you're in an apartment building, you can't be landing on the floor. You're still obeying all these rules?
I am.
I'm a little more lenient.
She's a little more.
Yeah, I'm like, you know what? If the people in, you know, floor 5 underneath us,
this is exactly
can
what she
handle
says.
1 hour of Olympians around. Trying to train, then we're gonna have a problem. We're gonna have to meet down in the lobby.
You really do say that, actually.
I do. I get like really aggressive.
But
like,
this
right
building
in the
has like, I was saying on that podcast, this building has like rules. You can't even vacuum during the day or like, I forget if it's during the day or it's like afternoons and nights and then
I've never heard of a vacuuming, daytime vacuuming prohibition. Are there lots of babies in the building?
No, it's more of an older demographic.
The opposite.
I respect the elderly schedule. You know what? They've earned it. They've earned you guys not vacuuming in the middle of the day.
There
That's
is.
Fine.
There it is.
They need to watch The Price is Right in peace or whatever.
Exactly. They got schedules.
Sue, are they going to pay you in the WNBA if there's no games?
Good question. We don't know. So we have no idea because we have no idea what's going to be, if there's going to be a season. Obviously, if it gets to like a certain point, let's call it August, and things turn around, then we would only be able to do like a limited season. So what does that mean for pay? But I can tell you what we don't have is that whole force majeure thing. We don't have that. That's not a part of our CBA. So that kind of, you know, like you just said, makes it a little interesting. So we'll see. I mean, it's so much. It's so funny. We have these conference calls and they're great because it's like, you know, Kathy Engelbert, our new commissioner, will be on them and our union, and she's like keeping us like in the know. And obviously she's having major conversations. She was just on with the president, all that stuff. But then simultaneously, it's like, we have no answers. Like we're all just like doing this dance. Yeah. And it's like, we'll know when we know, but it's nice to be kept again in the know, but then it's like, I don't know anything. Well, nobody has the answers.
The loop changes next week.
Yeah. Literally like next week. It's like tomorrow. It'll be a different.
Yeah, I know guys in the NBA who work for teams are like, they spend all day like crunching the numbers. Like, what's the cap going to be? Yeah. What about the salary cap in 2021? And they all have these moments of like, why am I doing this? Like, what is the point of me? Like, I just wasted 4 hours on something that's probably not going to be relevant in 48 hours.
Totally.
Well, I hope everyone gets paid and that the WNBA season can start at some point. Who is better? Before we get on to that. The serial segment of the JJ Redick podcast really struck a chord with the American populace. I just really was a big deal. And I have some issues, to take. Captain Crunch is disgusting.
Agreed.
Disgusting.
Okay. Agreed.
It's straight up disgusting. I cannot believe
never.
The FIFA World Player of the Year named freaking Captain Crunch as a serial. And Sue, You guys, we've known each other a while now. Somehow I never knew, and now my respect for you has deepened. Finally, somebody gave the proper respect to what I contend is the greatest cereal ever created by humans, Cookie Crisp.
Cookie Crisp.
Is the number one best. Now, you didn't have it at number one, but at least
I didn't have number one.
It doesn't even get mentioned. It doesn't even get mentioned. It's like I'm trying to think of the NBA team that it's like a champion from the 1970s that no one even, like the 70s Sonics or something. No one ever mentions Cookie Crisp. Yeah. It's number one.
I mean, listen, it's high on my list. I told you guys. All right, did I say this on the podcast? That was when my sister and I got good grades. Yeah. We got to get the sugary cereals, and Cookie Crisp was always number one, even before Lucky Charms back then. But then Lucky Charms stole my heart in Russia.
Lucky Charms is more disgusting than Captain Crunch. That's right.
No.
No, we had – in our house, we had sugar cereal month. We had a month where we could get sugar cereal.
Get it.
And let me tell you, I could do a box a day of Cookie Crisp. Like, I could do 30 boxes in a month of Cookie Crisp.
So good.
Underrated cereals. Are you ready? I really put a lot of thought into this. Underrated cereals. Crispix, underrated.
Honeycomb. Oh, Honeycomb's underrated.
Severely underrated.
I agree.
Kix.
Solid.
I'm not a huge
underrated.
I love Kix.
Although a friend, so Kix, we just had this conversation too, a couple days ago, not in depth like this, but somebody was like, oh, it was our friend's daughter. And she was like, I like Rice Krispies. And immediately I was like, oh my God, how could I forget about Rice Krispie treat cereal?
JJ brought that up on the podcast, I think. And it is incredible. I feel like 2/3 of the way through a bowl of Rice Krispie treat cereal, I begin to regret the decision.
You have a cavity.
It's a little too much.
Teeth are aching.
I just need to do just Cookie Crisp. It's the best cereal. It's indisputable. Anyone who's picking another number one is wrong. That's the end. It's my podcast. That's the end. Who is better? Sue at soccer or Megan at basketball?
We get this a lot.
We do get this a lot. I think if like we had to rewind and we're both in high school and we're having to push on, you're better at soccer for sure than I was at basketball. I mean, I'm like 5'6", so it's like, fast and not overly athletic. So there's not a lot and not a good shooter.
She's actually a really good basketball player. So like the short answer is when we're both 19, I'm the better soccer player than she is the basketball player. But now she's definitely the better. I can literally do one thing. It's basketball. My body freaks out if I do anything else.
Yeah. I'm a good rebounder.
She is a good rebounder.
I've heard that.
Poor thing.
I get into it. I take pride in it.
Yeah. Until her arms start to hurt. And then the passes are like, rolling.
Are you catching it and like, you know, banging the ball for between your hands like players do when they get rebounds? So it really makes us like a big noise.
Sometimes I get into it. Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, you know, if I'm really feeling it and if I've got some good grace going, I'll just do an immediate put back.
Yeah. Which is really annoying.
Really annoying. I've got to build up some good grace.
I'm like trying to do a workout and she gets it. She's like, reverse layup. I'm like, I'm just trying to get through this workout.
Yeah.
That's your job.
We'll work on your Euro step later.
I'm working on my moves. Yeah. I'm working on my double step back.
Working on her moves.
I try to, you know, do what I'm supposed to do because then that's, you know, what I'm there for.
You know what she would be really good at though? You could literally take over that guy B Dot and that other guy that he always
the impression guys.
Yes, she's like phenomenal at impression.
Who's a go-to?
So she actually just did like a collection of my Storm teammates one summer, and it was spot on, like scary.
I'm gonna have to do a little video.
Yeah, maybe we'll do a little video. Yeah.
That would go viral.
Definitely would go viral. Oh, we'll do it. We'll put it together.
Okay.
Who would you analogize yourself to in the NBA, Megan, or in the WNBA? Who's your NBA or WNBA comp if you played basketball? Would you be a chucker? Would you be a pass first player? Would you play any defense? What would you be?
Well, I'd have a lot of fouls.
I was about to say.
A lot of fouls. Foul out. I'd have to tighten that part of the game up. Gosh, I don't know. I do a lot of passing. I like passing.
You're a good passer.
The fun, loose. I'd probably have, you know, not a great turnover to assist ratio.
You have the clutch gene.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's we can't argue with that anymore.
No, you got the clutch gene.
I don't even know.
I'll have to think of a pass-first point guard who fouls a lot.
Yeah.
Like prime. Like,
isn't that good a defense? Like not even close to Steph, but like kind of like a Steph. Loose.
Are you like?
We'll do the fun things, but also we'll like have some wild ass turnovers.
Like Luka Doncic. Like, are you like a Luka?
He's not
pulling all the strings.
Let's not just start naming like first team all NBA level.
I mean,
players.
That's
like,
just
like right off the bat.
Yeah, but like a lesser version.
I'll go back to backup point guards then.
Yeah, backups. That might be.
Who
Oh, I know who you are. You're Luka's backup.
Who's that?
Jose Barrera.
Perfect.
JJ Barrera.
Oh, JJ Barrera. Sorry.
Yeah.
No, either one is fine, I think. How much trash talk is there in soccer, Megan?
Not that much. Like the field, I think, is so big and everyone's running around so much. Sometimes there's like a little bit. I don't really talk trash, but definitely like in the league, I like to just kind of talk. I'm actually talking all the time, like especially in training, because I'm just like, what else are we doing out there? You know, we're just kind of sitting in between drills. So everyone knows that like if you're going to be around me on my side, I'm just constantly just like yakking. I guess it's kind of trash talk, but it's not. I'm not like doing it.
You
as
do
much.
A lot of this, like hand wave, that. Like
a lot of commentary. It's just a running commentary. Pretty
I feel like
much.
I see this a lot. Yeah.
Sue, was the World Cup hard to watch? Because I find soccer like absolutely agonizing to watch. you guys have met my wife. She's Croatian, so I got super into the Croatian World Cup. And I just couldn't watch the games. I couldn't watch penalty kicks. You're actually emotionally invested in it. Was it hard for you to watch?
I think the hard part, and I might be putting words in your mouth, it's like, it's a sport we're so like unfamiliar with. So we have no sense of what the control is, right? It's like in basketball, when I watch a basketball game and I see someone at the free throw line, I can like relate to that and be like, oh yeah, this person should make this. But in soccer, there's like all these unknowns on what's makeable, what's not, what's this, what's that. So it's just this emotional roller coaster. So the hardest parts, I've said, was watching her take penalty kicks. And again, not because I was ever nervous she was going to miss. Although there was a small part of you where you're like, oh my God, if she misses, this is going to be bad. And then
so
like,
bad.
I'm going to have to deal with it now. But it's more so like, so I would find myself being like, all right, this is if I was on the free throw line, there's 5 seconds left and it's a tie game. And it's like, and then I'd be like, okay, she's got this. Cause that's like something I can relate to. It was the unrelatable where I would find, that's where I would get like anxious.
Yeah. You're more of like an internalizing while you're watching your emotions. I think I'm like a super crazy fan. I might as well just like be in like the normal fan section when games are going on. I like sort
hard.
Of like get it out. So
that I can relate
little,
to. I can relate to. I couldn't watch penalty kicks. They were unwatchable for me when I unwatchable.
It's
I don't know.
Kind of cruel. They're kind of cruel.
They kind of are.
Especially like when you go to the shootout, like just a one-off is less, but like just the in like the cruelty of like everyone's gotta walk up and walk back and it's 10 times and the time and the suspense. It's like
it's wild.
So do you know, Megan, do you know any, without naming names, because this would be me even if I were a professional soccer player, do you know any players who are like, you know what, just please never pick me to be one of the penalty kick takers. Like I'm opting out of it. I don't want to do it. Do you, like, I'm actually kind of semi serious. Are there players like that?
I mean, kind of, yeah. We definitely have like, well, we practice them all the time. So we do have like a running sheet of like your percentage and how good you are. And like, you know, we have like who's the best on down and that would be who would take them. But then we definitely like in, like even before, we're like, listen, if you're terrified, say it. Because some people are like, you know, even sometimes it's like a player you wouldn't think, maybe it's like a defender or something, or like someone who you wouldn't think would be really good at penalty kicks. Like, they're just really good. And sometimes someone who you think would be aren't. So it's like, if you're terrified in the moment, just say it so we can put you at the bottom of the list. And some players are like, yeah, honestly,
out.
I'm like, I'm not that comfortable taking them. Like, I'll take one if I have to, of course, if I'm number 10 or 11 on the list. But like, yeah, some players, and I encourage it. I'm like, just be honest. Just say it. Cause like, we need to have like everyone who's like wants, I want people who are like, you know, willing to like bang someone out of the way to take one. I want those people up there. It's like, it's a stressful thing. It's weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
That's very comforting for me that there are high level athletes who are terrified of it, because I want no part of the whole, I don't even want to watch it. Sue, what is the most nervous you have been in a basketball game, whether it was a free throw? I imagine it has to be some static moment where the game stops. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the free throws.
But what game, what moment?
Yeah. So, Okay. In Russia. So this is like, this actually, yeah, in Russia, they have, it's actually like a European thing and not everybody subscribes to it, but a lot of times it'll be a tie game. So let's say, so this is exactly what happened. My team, Spartak, we were up two. Other team had the ball. Let's call it 20 seconds. I have no idea. They come, they run a play, they score, they tie the game. So now let's say there's 10 seconds. We come out. So it's a tie game. In America, you just play that out and you count on your defense. A lot of teams in Europe, a lot of coaches, they have a different philosophy where they're like, we want to have the ball left. So they foul you. So even though the score is tied, you're now on the foul. If you miss, so there's, like I said, 7 to 10 seconds. If you miss, they now have the last shot. That's those two free throws. Because first of all, it's not what we had run a play. We'd call timeout. We were like,
why'd someone foul me?
Yeah. I was like, oh, it was right on the inbound. Boop, foul. I was like, oh my God. It caught me by surprise. And then as I approached the free throw line, I was like,
Was this a playoff game or a random regular
season? It was a regular season game, but it was, there was like seeding implications. Like we had to win to be the number one seed. If we lost,
also, probably straight up oligarchs in the stands. Like, messing up in front of an oligarch feels like it's.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. Yeah, you don't want to do that. They're holding up the scarf. You don't want to do that.
Did you make them both?
Yeah, I made them both.
Why did they? What are you? You? I bet you're like an 89% career free throw shooter. Why are they fouling you?
They want the math on
that doesn't check out.
They want to have the ball last.
Well, can't they foul someone who shoots 60%? I mean, I guess they only have 10 seconds, but you were that nervous. What did you do to calm yourself down?
Nothing. It's like what we're just talking about. It's like, oh, I've taken a billion of these. Just go up there and shoot it.
I feel like I do the pre thing where I'm like, you know, sort of just, you know, even before the game or before tournaments even start, like for the World Cup, whatever. I've like already gone into my head and been like, okay, there's a scenario where it goes into penalty kicks. We're in the final of the World Cup. I miss. I lose the World Cup for the country.
You've lived that scenario in your head?
Like, yeah, definitely. So then when I get there, I'm like, well, I mean, and then,
I already know
it's like, what could, you know, it's like, you're either going to make it or you're going to miss it. So that's what I told my team. There was a few like younger teammates who were like kind of stressing about the penalties. And I'm like, listen, literally the worst thing that you could do is like lose the World Cup for your country. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Obviously. I mean, that's just like, just say it. But like, don't be afraid to just say it because like, it could happen, you know. But like,
just verbalize.
Wow,
I lost the most for an entire nation of people.
It's the worst.
And then you're just happen. Like, well, here we are. Instead of getting to that moment, and you're like, oh my God, they could lose this whole thing for the nation. And then it's just like,
all right, so you try to make it like not as scary.
Yeah, you try to make it not as
scary. Try to take the power. All right.
Wow.
I kind of get it. I've never done that.
Megan, what is your hottest basketball take? It could be anything. It could be a player that's overrated. It could be a way you would change the season. It could be anything. What's your hottest take when you guys are watching games?
Oh, man. I mean, I always have a lot of opinions. Gosh, what's my hottest take?
Or a hot take.
Yeah.
A hot take.
Just something you've said. I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like you need to help me on this.
I know, I'm trying to think.
What do I always say? I always like, because I just watch as a fan. Like, I don't like totally. I mean, I know what's going on. I've watched basketball for a long time. But like, I don't know all the ins and outs. I'm like, is this player that good? Or like, what is up with this player? Or what are they like? What's their personality? Are they ever going to win a championship? This and that.
Like who?
I mean, the Rockets, they're never going to win like that.
Yes!
Never. It's just like, it just can't happen. It just like, no matter how good James Harden is, like, I mean, at least I've never seen it in.
You're never going to be invited to Sloan, ever.
Because well, it's all analytics.
No, it's Daryl Morey's
guy. I know.
You're done.
But
you're
it's
out.
Like, it's like he has to perform at, like, you know, apex levels for every game of the whole, like, playoffs, basically, in order for them to win. It's not going to happen.
I like it. That satisfied the answer. The question.
I hate to say it, but it's not going to work.
So on a more serious note, sometime within the last year, and Sue wrote a wonderful essay about this for the Players Tribune, both of your lives changed, I would imagine. And they changed because Megan became a symbol of lots and lots of things. And some of the things that she came to embody and symbolize, how can I say this? annoyed the president of the United States, who expressed his annoyance. So, Megan, I think I already know the answer to this from reading some articles, but was there ever a moment where you were thinking to yourself, this is overwhelming? Like, maybe you got 500 text messages in one day, or maybe 1,000. Because I know, just like from even my buddies in the media, when you suddenly become part of a story in a way that you're not expected to, it can start off as exciting and it can quickly transition into, I kind of want to hide in my hotel room until this blows over. But you, I don't think you ever felt that, right? Like, you were just like, bring it, let's go.
Yeah, I really didn't. And to this day, like, I know the magnitude of, I mean, first of all, of like, you know, any president tweeting at you. Like, even when I see stuff in the past of like, you know, Barack Obama holding up a jersey, or I've been to, you know, the Bush White House, and I've been to the Obama White House. Like, there's a magnitude to it of the presidency. And then you put like, you know, Trump in there. Like, that's just insane. And so to have him like go off like that, like in such a weird, it was all like glitchy too. I was like, wait, are you in? You're rooting for us? Because you love America and you want us to win, but now you're rooting against us because it's us and it's me. It was like, I'm like, you're having like a full on glitch out right here. But it's so it's like, I know the magnitude of it, but I never had that gut feeling like, oh man, this is bad. I was kind of like, you look bad and I just need to like own it. And the only really thing that I did wrong was like say the F word, if that's even like the wrong thing. And just kind of the way the tournament was playing out too, like we were sort of in a bubble, but you always have those like media moments. And it was kind of like, I don't know. I think the team and myself, we were just kind of like in this little bubble and we were sort of primed for it anyways. And it just sort of added to the magnitude. And I don't know. I love those big moments too. So I felt like the World Cup was exploding and it was like so popular, and at this game that we were about to play against France was like the game that everyone had circled. And I feel like I had so much support, and like within the team and within the group, like we had, you know, our president was there, and like you know, other like high members from US soccer, obviously the coaching staff, the team, everyone was like, we got your back. So I feel like if everyone else was a little bit more stressed out and like exposing that to me, or you know, kind of saying that, maybe I would have had that feeling. But everyone's just kind of like, that's wild. And I was like, I know, can you believe it? Like, this is insane. And I was like already scheduled to go to the press conference. So I just kind of said it right away. And then I don't know. I just like, there was just nothing that was going to like get in the way of us winning and doing our job on the field. So I feel like as long as we just kind of focused on that, then I was like, you played yourself.
Well, I speaking of which, I read a clip when you were talking about this. And you said, actually, the only thing that I was really worried about was, is this going to affect the team? And I assume you meant like, are people just going to be stressed out from answering questions about it? Are people going to like, is it just going to become such a thing? But nothing, right?
Yeah, it really didn't. And I think my team had the same response. They were kind of like, oh my God, this is so wild. Like, you've got Trump trying to take you down on Twitter, like 2 days before we play the biggest game of the World Cup. Like, this isn't, so there's almost like, of course, the presidency has a magnitude to it, but also Trump, you know, doesn't take his job seriously in a lot of ways and doesn't act presidential and, you know, sort of just goes off the handle all the time about these things. So that sort of lessened the like importance or seriousness of it in this way, because he had done this with so many people across so many different things, and different athletes as well. So it's kind of like, of course he's going to, you know, say, well, you're not invited anyways. And it's like, we already weren't coming, so you can't rescind that invitation.
Yeah. I quit. You can't fire me.
Yeah,
did you have to switch phones?
I didn't.
That day, I just can't even imagine. Your phone just must've been like, and I would have thrown it.
Yeah, there was a lot. I actually don't do a lot of comment reading. As is, I've kind of like always been.
Like, this is just like text, that, but
like
text
people from, hitting
yeah,
you up.
A lot of text messages. Yeah. I mean, I had such a great team around me. I mean, shout out to my agency too, Wasserman. They were like furious on the back end, like doing all kinds of work in cybersecurity. And I got a lot of like, reset your account for Snapchat, reset your account for email, you know, like a lot of kind of like cyber hacking going on. But Yeah, I was able to keep my phone number. Thank God. I don't want to lose that.
Sue, as that was happening, did you – now, you embraced it too. You wrote this awesome piece for the Players Tribune that went like crazy popular. They win, so it's a great story, period. Like, whether you agree with the politics or don't, USA won the big thing. We can all get behind that. But did you have a sense as this is happening of, like, life is not going to be the same after this? Like, going to restaurants when we used to be able to do that is not going to be the same. Just, like, regular life is now going to change because Megan went from famous athlete, super famous in the soccer world, to, like, one of the most famous people on planet Earth for a period of time.
No, I didn't. I don't know if that makes me like, I don't know.
Realize.
No, I had no idea. Yeah. I don't even remember. I don't necessarily remember a moment either. I had some friends who kind of joked with me and they'd be like, I forget exactly what they would say. They'd be like, oh, like you're Megan's girlfriend now. You know what I mean? To be like Megan's blown up. And I was like, yeah, whatever. I don't know. And then, I mean, very quickly after they won, it was like, oh boy, very quickly, I realized.
Yeah. As soon as we got home.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, oh, it's different.
Yeah. Or even like, I think the best example is at the ESPYs. So something they don't tell you, maybe the viewers watching, is at the ESPYs during commercial breaks, people can kind of like get up and move around. And there's a lot of like fans in the audience. Like whether actually, to be honest, there's some athlete fans, like people who are athletes who are fans of each other. Yeah. And then there's just like, you know, little kids or families or whoever. And it's like Patrick Mahomes is sitting next to me and he's getting like his fair share. Megan's getting like swarmed. So here we are at the ESPYs, like every big name in sports, every commercial break, Megan is getting absolutely swarmed. And I was like, oh, like,
yeah. All right. So who's the person you met subsequent to all of this where you were like, again, this is you are someone who embraced the storm and was fine with it, but there had to have been a celebrity that you met where you were like, oh my God, I'm meeting whoever. Like for me, it was like when I saw Denzel Washington a foot away from me at a Lakers game, I was like, holy, that's Denzel Washington. Who, so who was the one? Nobody.
Oh, man, I feel like I'm going to help you. This.
Yeah. I feel like there was a lot. I mean, I generally don't like, totally geek out on celebrities. I mean, there's a few.
At the ESPYs, like Tate Donovan beelined it for her. I was like, that was Tate Donovan. She was like, who? I was like, never mind. I'm like, you've never seen Love Potion number 9? You've never seen Love Potion number 9?
I got to go on Anderson Cooper, and I really love Anderson Cooper. So that
they geeked out over you, though. They geeked out over you, though.
I'll have to think on that.
I mean, I just remember.
It was cool, though. Just like the outpouring of support, like, I mean, it's great that obviously we won and like our sport, you know, is like, you know, growing and becoming more exciting and becoming more popular. But it just seemed like people were so excited for such a different reason. Like that was the coolest part about it, I think.
So like this person also like grooved out on Megan hard, Laura Dern. So you were on Seth Meyers and she was like, like went over to you.
She
and
was
like,
really cool.
That's who Megan was for like, I mean, even now, to be honest, but during that stretch, you were making celebrities be fans, like big celebrities were like, people, it was crazy.
People, I think I texted you a photo. Like it was Halloween and trick or treating. People were like multiple children in my neighborhood. By the way, I thought this was very cool. Both boys and girls were dressed up with
boys,
the hair and as you.
A lot of boys over the summer. That was cool. That was really cool.
Something I didn't know until I was reading up. Where is the Rapino dinner time family conversation at right now? Because I didn't know your dad is maybe a conservative Republican and you guys have had arguments. But you said you talk every day. Everything's fine.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Totally. That can't be true.
I know. It's kind of funny. I think people look, probably assume that I'm like,
born,
you know,
from
the left coast and like some like, you know, I mean, I'm a raging liberal, but most of my family, pretty much all my family, we're from like pretty small town, Northern California. And most of them are quite conservative. I mean, I think we're just honest with each other. And like, I obviously don't agree with a lot of the politics and I'm always trying to like get in there and talk about it and, you know, just sort of like, yeah, I guess just, you know, say my view and they say their view. But I mean, it was a little awkward for sure after the election in 2016. And everyone was like, just give him a chance. I said, okay, we'll do that. Okay. So let's do that. So here we are. But yeah, it'll be interesting coming up to this election. We'll see. I'll definitely be getting there with the family conversation.
Did it affect, and I mean this in the most serious way possible, did it affect the way that you and your family understood the coronavirus? In other words, there was all this, like, is Fox News downplaying it? Are people who religiously get their views from Fox News not behaving appropriately and not social distancing quickly enough? Like, did you have arguments about that? Like, guys, behave. This is a real thing.
Yeah, a little bit in the beginning. And I think it was two part. I mean, I think that my dad in particular watches more conservative media than liberal media. I think my mom's kind of like in the middle, but they're also like from a small town. So we were in big cities when this was happening. Sue was in Seattle when, you know, the Kirkland nursing home kind of went off, and then we both traveled east. And so we were both like in the New York area. So we were kind of like, it was sort of like in our face a little bit more and like happening to us more. And they were like in a really small town. They still only had like a few cases in their town. So I think there was like kind of double the sort of coupling. But I think kind of right away, like I basically spent like 24 hours on the phone with my mom being like, this is real. You can't go out. You can't get your nails done. You can't have a family dinner. And so it just like kind of took a minute. And then, yeah, I have like a little nephew too. And like, he's just young. Like all kids right now are like, okay, like, we're going to stay inside, but like, can I just hang out with my friend? My mom had to lay the hammer down. She like threatened to kick him out of the house. He was like, wait, what? What do you mean? She's like, yeah, you heard me. Take everything. If you want to go hang out with your friends, you can take all your stuff and you're not coming back until this is lifted. But overall though, they're fine now. They got on board real quickly.
We're going to get back to the Rapinoe family in a second. Sue, you brought up Russia, and I demanded that if you were going to appear on this podcast, I needed one Diana Taurasi in Russia story, because I could hear 5 hours of them, but give me a Diana, a good so Diana good. Taurasi in Russia story.
So I settled on a safe one. So
I'm disappointed right off
already.
The
bat. I know. Just know they get a little, I feel like I would need like written permission from her.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. That's fair.
No. So every year, after at some point during the end of the season, they have like a sports banquet and they honor like the best player, but they also, so they do best male Russian player, best female Russian player, and then best like foreigner that came to the league. So obviously like myself, Diana on at that time, Lauren Jackson's on the team, but there's all kinds of great players. So it's best foreigner. There's an award for that too. Okay. And so D was like probably going to get it. And so we go to the banquet and the whole banquet's in Russian. Actually, sidebar, this is one of my favorite stories. For another reason, which is it happened to be like the 20th anniversary or something, maybe 30th of when, the USSR beat America in that very, controversial ending where they replayed it. You know, they had to replay it 3-4 times.
The 1972 Olympics. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So they had to go the length of the court, length of the court. But the irony is, as an American, now mind you, the entire banquet's in Russian. We have no idea what's going on. Zero. But I can see highlights, and they're basically showing, they're only showing the last one.
Oh boy.
They're only showing the one where they score, they win, it's over. And all of us are sitting there like, what about the other highlights?
Yeah.
Where are the, so it's just interesting. They aren't even going to show the rest. So anyways, they finally get to the part where they're about to announce, the female foreign player of the year. And Diana, we're all kind of sitting there and she's like, do I have to like go up there and give a speech? And they're like, yeah, like players, like all the Russians who had gone up before her gave a speech. Again, all in Russian. We have no idea what's happening. She was like, all right, like I'll do my best. So she goes up there, and our head coach at the time, her name was Nata, and our owner, his name was Shabtai. And so she goes up there, she gets the award, and she's in front of the mic, and she goes, and spasiba in Russia means thank you. And she goes, spasiba Nata, spasiba Shabtai, spasiba, and walks off. And we were like, okay, like pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah, you know, good job. We'll move on. Next award is like the male foreign player. And, it was a Greek player. You probably know him. Papa Lucas, I think his last name is. One of the Lucases, yeah. We'll get back to it. A really good, played for CSKA, really good. He goes up there And they're like, oh, you know, this guy wins. He goes up there. He's like, hey, I just went all in English. I want to say a big thank you to my teammates. Like, guys, you got me here. This is the reason why. And, you know, my coaches, like, oh, I played for you now for a couple of years. Like, I'm so much love for Cesca. I love Russia. I love playing. He did like this full on speech. And we were like, D, you look like a freaking idiot. Спасибо, Ната. Спасибо, Шабтай. Спасибо.
I feel like life overseas, I only played overseas 1 year and it was in France. So I would imagine like it's probably even more of a culture change a long time ago in Russia. You spent 10 years there. But it's like 90% you have no idea what's going on. 10% of the time you know something kind of what's going on. So you basically just spend like 90% of the time just being like, no idea. No idea what we're doing in practice, what time practice is, where we're going, what's being said, the jokes, like, you just are kind of like in, like a la la land almost. You're just
nice.
You miss it all.
You have zero responsibility yeah. whatsoever.
Okay, yeah. Sue, you owe me one off record shots, sure. Vodka shots with Anna Taurasi and Russia story. And I'm going to cash in.
They usually end up in her vomiting. I'll just start with that.
She's such a legend. One of the all-time great trash talkers. Somebody in the league once told me they literally had to go to Diana. Like WNBA officials had to go to Diana. This is like 5 years ago, maybe, and say, you can't say these things to the referees.
Yeah.
Because when it's quiet, the people in the front row can like hear you. And the language that you're using is like worse than Rashid Wall. It's like so bad.
Oh, do you know the Floyd Mayweather story?
I don't think so.
Okay. So
I'm very excited now.
Okay. Yeah, so he was, awesome. You know what I'm saying? So he's gone to a lot of Sparks games in the past. So he was sitting courtside, like, and at LA Sparks games, they actually have seats where they're like, at the table. So it's not just courtside. He's like literally at the table next to the Phoenix Mercury bench. So he's like right there. And I think it started out like somewhat friendly, you know, just like, oh, hey, DT, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, Diana not going to back down is like talking, never, you know, John back to Floyd Mayweather. Who know? I don't even know what the actual trash talk was at that point, but it was a lot of jawing back and forth. She's playing, coming out the game, talking. So at one point, I don't know what she said, but she said something that pissed him off. So at one point she said something. I'll find out what it was. And he goes, you know what, D? I'm going to buy the Mercury. I'm going to change the name to the Sparks. And I was like, damn, the ultimate shutdown. She had no comeback. She was like, I'm about to buy your team and change the name to the Sparks.
But, and she was so like, what? So what? You're still going to pay me my money? Like, I don't care.
Basically like, I'm going to own you.
Pay me my salary. That's fine. It's not that good.
Not that good. It's the one time she's ever been silenced.
Yeah, it's hard to silence her. It's so
hard to silence her. She should have been able to get back. She should have been able to have a retort. That's pretty good, though. I didn't know that Floyd Mayweather was a frequent attendee at Sparks games.
Every now and then, yep.
Megan, one of the most moving stories of sports journalism I have read in the last year, and I was not familiar with it before, was about your brother Brian, who has been in and out of prison for a long time for various drug-related offenses. And the last story that was written was right before the World Cup final, I think, was a big one that I had read. How is he now and where is he now?
He's doing all right. He is in Orange County. I think he's clean at the moment. He had a couple hiccups over the summer, a couple relapses. So that was kind of a bummer and kind of sad. But that's like the journey, to be honest. I mean, I think that's like the one thing that I've kind of learned throughout this all is it's not like you just like get sober and you're like, oh, okay, I'm sober. You know, it's like an everyday choice and just kind of how quickly, you know, things can change both for the good and for the bad. But he's doing all right now, getting clean and, getting back together. It's kind of a scary time. Obviously there's a lot of sort of like vulnerable populations right now. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, the prison systems and how, they're just ripe for outbreak. I mean, you can see at Rikers, like, it's just kind of crazy. You know, we've already had overcrowding everything and then throw a pandemic in there. But overall, he's doing all right. So thank you for asking.
I thought it was, and he literally almost lived to some degree, like an American History X kind of story. like befriending a black nationalist in prison, having that change his views. Although I think, you know, his adoption of white nationalism, as explained in the story, was sort of a matter of convenience and security rather than actual belief. But I'm reading the story, like, this is a crazy story. It's an unbelievable story. And it's so touching that you guys have remained close, and like, cause family can sometimes splinter apart, and that didn't happen with you guys.
Yeah, no, it's been, I mean, obviously it's been hard. It's like, you know, something that the whole family has to deal with all the time. But, yeah, I mean, that was part of the reason why I wanted to share the story too, because like, I think there's so many misconceptions about, you know, what like a person in prison is like, or how they got there, or a drug addict, or white nationalist, or whatever it may be. And like, the juxtaposition of me and him coming from the same exact family, like basically with the same exact upbringing, I just thought was like important to tell. I think there's like too much misconception about that. And that story doesn't get told enough, that it's literally just like, you know, you're normal people. And, you know, him kind of coming of age, as we know now, during the opioid crisis, and just to think like how much of that was going on when he was growing up. And it was just obviously totally unregulated and wild now. But I thought that was kind of a important story to tell. And it's something that I, you know, I never have shied away from in our family, just in general. It's something that was just part of it. Like, yes, we have, you know, a brother who's a drug addict, and a lot of people do. So I feel like if I'm going to, you know, be as open as I am about everything else in my life, then that was something that needed to be shared too.
Well, I think it's important because, you know, before anything happens to people, they have this idea that these are things that happen to other people. These are just like, these are crazy stories that happen to other people. And like, as you get older and your social circle expands and your family's social circle expands and you, your loved ones change or go through stuff, like what you think is crazy is actually, and an outlier story is actually not at all. And these kind of things are going to hit everybody. We are all going to know people who suffer lots of different problems. And so I think it's important to normalize it and just say, yeah, this isn't like something to be ashamed of. This doesn't make us like wildly different. It's actually going to hit everybody.
Yeah. I mean, especially in the context of mass incarceration and the opioid crisis, like you have sort of these two things happening at the same time. Mass incarceration from a social justice perspective is always, is usually seen, you know, rightfully so, disproportionate, affecting people of color, black and brown people. But there's just been a lot of people swept up in it, and a lot, like my brother, like obviously he needs drug treatment. He doesn't need to go to prison and spend, you know, he's going to be 40 this summer. He doesn't need to spend 20, 25 years of his life in and out of prison. Like we've got to find a better way for this. And also like with the opioid crisis, so many people were affected, and like, honestly, it's just like not their fault. Like we're told to trust our doctors. We're told to trust our healthcare providers. And you have some of these, you know, especially these smaller towns, rural towns, where maybe the economy is not great or the education isn't great, or you don't have a lot of opportunity. Like, of course people are going to turn to that. And that's where these big companies, honestly, just like feasted on these small towns and pumped it in there. I think there's kind of a famous story of one of the West Virginia towns. It's like a town of like 300 or 400 people. Someone won a Pulitzer Prize, like, out of the Charleston Gazette, I think it was. He just wrote a book. Smallest newspaper to win a Pulitzer Prize. But this town of like 300 or 400 people, and there was like 12 million opioid pills like pumped into this town over a 4 or 5 year period. And so to just like wrap it all up and to tell that story and to like humanize what the opioid crisis means, because I think people don't really realize that like it was flooding the streets essentially.
Yeah, it's an issue that I'm passionate about, because in what feels like a different life, I used to cover the criminal justice system, and there was a 6-month, 8-month period where every week, Wednesday evenings, I would drive up to Bridgeport, Connecticut, and sit in on like a prison reentry group of guys who had just gotten out of prison and were trying to put their lives back together. And it was guys who had done everything from violent assaults that would scare you if you heard about them, to drugs, to like, you know, made them like a burglary or something. And like you could see most of these guys are good guys, and just they had no shot, because nobody was going to hire them. They were so stigmatized. Society had stigmatized them so deeply that, you know, some of their families didn't want anything to do with them. Some did, but they couldn't get hired. And it would break my heart listening to them talk, because even the guys who had clearly turned a page and figured some stuff out, this was their sanctuary. This was a place where they felt at home and accepted, this group. And once they left, they were still the guys that had been in prison. They were still the ex-cons. And it was just, it was heartbreaking because you could just see like it just wasn't going to work.
Well, all that they're cut out from too. As soon as you go to prison and have felony on your record, like you can't vote, you can't get this job. You have to, you know, file as a felon all the time. You have to put it on all of your resumes. You have to, you know, so it's like every time you get a ding, then like the employer is going to be like, well, I can hire this person who has felony or I can hire this person who doesn't have a felony. It's just like, there's got to be a better way that we take care of people in our society. I think we always see it as this like, oh, these people, they're choosing this life or they're whatever. But it's like, I'm sorry. Like, yeah. Okay. My brother was 18 or 19, whatever. He made his choices, but it's like now he's however old he is and he's just been cycling, you know, through the prison system for however long. Now this is what he knows, you know, and society's not like doing a lot to help him know a different way. It's at every step of the way, prove this, prove this, prove this, prove this, prove this. And it's like, there's at some point, there's got to be some kind of help and some kind of responsibility on society's part as well. You know, that's like the federal government, that's the drug companies, all of it, like, you know, Purdue Pharma, in my opinion, should not have a dollar in their bank. They should be paying for everybody's drug facilities. But, you know, there has to be some sort of responsibility as a society that we take for all of this.
Let's end on happier notes. Megan, I was looking up who some of your sports heroes were, and we'll get to that. But it struck me, like, Sue, who were your sports heroes when you were growing up?
Sports heroes.
Basketball heroes. I don't know.
Yeah, no. So usually, like, the person that inspired me the most, quote unquote, when I get asked, it's actually my sister, who's 5 years older. And I always say, like, I did everything she did. So if she, you know, I don't know, played tennis, I was going to play tennis. And I joke, like, luckily at some point she picked up a basketball, but how great to have somebody who, you know, was really motivated, very good in school, super smart, very good at sports. Like I said, just extremely emotive to this day, just a very motivated person. I had that to look and, you know, look at every day in my house. But my favorite player growing up, if you take it way back, it's actually Kenny Skywalker.
Wow.
I know. So I'm a Knicks fan. And, you know, when you're like 6 or 7, what do you want to see? I don't know. A guy with a flat top doing some slam dunk.
Slam dunk champion.
Exactly. And then as I got older, I became a huge fan of Mike Bibby. So that was like around high school days. Big fan of Mike Bibby. Big fan.
I could see some similarities there, actually.
Well, I always say, I'm like, we both wore number 10. We're both scoring point guards. Right.
Knockdown jump shooters.
Right. And we're both bow legged. There it is. Done. There it is. Check.
But by the way, can you come? I mean, you've worked for the Denver Nuggets. Can you come save the Knicks maybe? Can the Knicks call you?
I've had that conversation. I'm like, if the Knicks call and offer you, what would they have to offer you? X amount. Would you do it?
I mean, what do I know about saving an NBA team?
What do they know?
I was going to say, first of all, you've worked for the Denver Nuggets. They all speak highly of you. You clearly know the game and the cap. I think you know enough, Sue Bird. Megan, the name that came up when I was reading about it, about who you looked up to, was Christine Lilly. And I was so happy to read that because A, she's from Wilton, Connecticut, near where I grew up. So she's a Connecticut legend. And B, she made one of the all-time badass, not forgotten because people remember it, hardcore sports fans remember it, the header off the line against China in the 1999 World Cup on their corner kick that was going in. It was in. Oh, it was the goal.
Yeah, it was done deal.
That is an all-time badass sports play.
Oh, it was actually an unbelievable play because those types of roles, like 99% of the time, nothing ever happened. And so they usually put people who like aren't very good at heading. That, like I would probably be in that role, who like aren't great at defense. It's kind of like the fringe players are like, oh, okay, this is like likely not going to happen. So put them on the post, or you kind of like put them like a little bit farther out.
The corner guy.
Yeah. You put like your strongest people in the middle and they're the ones going to like challenge. So for her to like stay locked in and be focused in that moment and like not fall, because a lot of people fall asleep. A lot of people would be standing on the post as the ball like, you know, goes right by their head, which is like such a heads up play. And she was always like so creative. I feel like that team had so many superstars, but I feel like she was like a superstar, but like not given like the credit for it, and just how impactful she was on that team. And I got to play with her like late in her career, early in my career. And she was just so cool, like so down to earth. She kind of like took a few of us under her wing and just was like, yeah, I get it. Like basically just like, she's like, I know I'm like Christine Lilly to you. Like, I'm like, yeah, I had like posters of you on my wall. And she's like, yeah, I get that. But like, okay, let's just.
I was going to ask you, as someone who never played soccer. So I rewatched that clip today, the clip from the 99 World Cup final. And I thought, okay, it's a corner kick. I remember it was a corner kick. So she's already there in that position. So I wanted to ask you, like, how hard, like, how unusual and how hard of a play actually is that if you're in that, like, in my head, it was in the run of play and she, like, it was like the Derek Jeter flip to home plate where it was like this great improvisational thing, but it wasn't really improvised, but you're telling me it was still like a super hard play to time.
Yeah,
it like
it's actually harder because you have to be like doing everything that you're supposed to be doing, thinking ahead, being in the right position, like being disciplined and focused. It wasn't one of those like athletic plays. Sometimes those are like easier to make. You're just in the moment. Like as an athlete, you just like get instinctual and do those things. But those are the ones where like, you're like, oh, I did not do what I was supposed to do. And like, you're out of position by 1 foot and like, you know, they don't win the World Cup. So to me, that was just like, you know, her like discipline and mentality always was just like top notch.
That is an all-time great sports play, and Christine Lilly is a legend. The last thing, Bill Simmons and I had this discussion at the end of our podcast last week, and I feel like because we all need to be cheered up, I'm going to ask everybody that comes on this question. Either one of you, what is the hardest you have ever laughed in a movie ever? And it doesn't have to be a clever joke or an artful joke, just like, what is the thing in a movie that just made you flat out laugh the hardest? And my answer, I will reveal it so that you know. And yeah, like, okay. The moment in the South Park movie when they begin when Terrence and Phillip at the beginning of the movie begin to sing the song Uncle
Yeah.
And I realize that this is what the movie is going to be. And hey, the music is really good and it's clever.
Yeah, it is good.
That is the hardest I've ever laughed at anything. I have a runner up answer that may approach that I can give later, but this, so like, it's a safe space.
Okay.
It's Ace Ventura for me, for sure.
Ace Ventura was on TV yesterday.
Yeah, it was on TV yesterday.
So something we've been doing during this quarantine is we have like a Sunday brunch with like five other people. And we're on FaceTime and we literally like hang out brunch from like noon to like 10 p.m. I'm not even joking. Like you come in and out. And so at one point Ace Ventura was on. So throughout like that 2 hour period, we were just doing lines, like all of us back and forth to each other. And you just forgot how golden.
Excuse me. I need to ask you a few questions.
Not bad, Megan Rapinoe.
I was Ace Ventura like five times for Halloween in my childhood. Like I was obsessed with Jim Carrey.
You have the hair right now to do it.
I know she does. She needs a haircut. That's funny. Yeah, I thought about this a little bit.
Okay.
So
okay.
Ace Ventura is like fresh. So it's obvious. You can by all means continue to do lines.
No.
So the two that came to mind that I remembered was in Borat. Like I really enjoy Borat. Like to me, like that comedy, it's hilarious.
To
uncomfortable.
It's an objectively funny character and movie.
Yes. Uncomfortable at times. At the end when he's like, Pamela! And he's chasing her in the parking lot. You probably haven't seen it. You're the worst.
I've seen it.
Pamela! I love you! Now you know, so Megan doesn't know, but obviously at some point he's being taught. I know. He's being taught all these like American sayings and one of them is not, but he like not getting it throughout the movie. And then at the very end, he goes, Pamela, I love you. And she's literally running away. It's real Pamela Anderson.
Yeah.
She like really thinks this guy is like stalking her. Yeah. And then out of nowhere, he goes, not.
And you just lost it.
I was like, oh my God, lost it. Was not expecting it, even though it's so obvious when you think about it. Was not expecting it. So good. And then the other, my close second, is the final scene in Hangover when they're like, well, guys, we've got this camera. And they go through all the you spin my head right round, right round. And they go through all the pictures.
That was
a good one. That was a good one, too. That was a really good one.
Megan, is there an Ace Ventura line in particular that you would like to honor or a moment? Because there are moments. It's not just lines. I agree, by the way. Ace Ventura is hilarious and holds up very, very well.
Very well.
It's just so funny. I don't even know if there's one line. I do like to ask you a few questions.
Yeah. Well,
that's a good one.
I can tell you my
favorite. I did it the other day.
She did it the other day.
My,
like, talking
like you actually acted it out?
Yeah, I had to. She was like giving me shit about something and I was like, you know what?
You're supposed to be an American hero.
Yep.
She was dignity.
I know. It's just too good.
Wait, what's your runner up?
Yeah, what's your runner up?
Well, first of all, I think the best joke in Ace Ventura is when he's getting into the empty pool, which is like a 5-minute tour de force. And he says to Courtney Cox, if I'm not back in 5 minutes, just wait longer. Like that is an objectively fantastic joke. And then the whole thing in the pool. And when Ace goes to the party and introduces himself as Tom Ace and goes to, and like does the whole James Bond thing.
Incredible. He jumps over the pool. He goes back over the pool. He almost falls.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing. We've traveled back in time. The whole thing is gold. It's like,
we're putting it on right when we get off here.
So, but, my runner up for in theater, senior year of high school, Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, yeah.
Another Jim Carrey movie.
Good. So good.
Which part?
When Jeff Daniels and why am I blanking on the actress?
Oh, I don't even. I can see her face. Lauren Holly, Mary Swanson.
In my head, her name is Lauren Holly. Are going on their little ski date that is supposed to be Jim Carrey's ski date. Yeah. And she playfully throws a snowball at him.
I just snorted.
And he winds up and chucks it at her face.
So
I literally fell out of my seat in the movie theater. Girl I was with, I think, thought it was obnoxious that I thought it was that funny. But it was just the shock value of like, oh, this is going to be the joke. Because you see it coming and then it dawns on you like he doesn't understand what flirting is. And he's just going to gun this at close range into her face. That I almost fell out of my chair.
I could do this all day. My favorite scene in that is the IOUs. That's for a car. I'd keep that one.
I think maybe I don't know what the kids like and like what people are. Is Dumb and Dumber underrated or does it have its proper, like Dumb and Dumber is a masterpiece follow up to Ace Ventura.
Yeah, no, I think it gets its. I think people appreciate it.
Okay,
I don't know about young kids.
Because it's hard to follow up Ace Ventura.
Ace Ventura was so good, and we were saying how like of all the movies in the world, Ace Ventura has the best sequel. Like the sequel,
it's good.
Wasn't the same, but it was good.
It was pretty good. I was just so heartbroken that it wasn't quite as good because Ace Ventura was a formative comedy for me. Well, you guys have brought the A game to this question, and I have taken up too much of your time, and I have a Zoom surprise birthday party that I am late for. Thank you guys so much for doing this. It's such a pleasure to talk to you. I guess. Congratulations. I should say, you know what I should say? Congratulations on all your success. You smell terrific. But congratulations on everything. I hope we get to see you guys play sports soon. Stay healthy and stay safe. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, same to you guys.
Thank you.